Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Danky Kang Williams.
I don't know why you're so mean to me.
It just makes sense.
No, it doesn't.
Also with us is our intern slash part-timer slash stenographer slash coffee bringer who brings no coffee, Amy, with us as well.
Yay.
Don't sound too excited. We still have that meeting with HR.
Not again. That was last week.
And of course, we have us a special guest tonight as we are bringing in the VGB host, the host with the most, Sacramento's most premier video game podcast host, Corey Vincent, with us here tonight.
Hey, what's up, pizzas? We don't have to lie anymore. We haven't recorded an episode for like 2 years.
It lives on in infamy. It's either on YouTube, it's out there on Spotify. If it's on the internet, it'll be forever. So, I mean, that's the truth.
Yeah, okay. I like it.
It's speaking of video games and Danky Kang, we're going to be talking about the recently dropped films, The Super Mario Brothers. We're going to be getting into the details and talking about our thoughts and having a little fun. So before we jump into that, Spencer, give us some opening credits.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. You can check us out over at our website where we have everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, conversations about the industry. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website, filmlosophers.com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, whether if it's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audioboom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, or iHeart. You can tune into your heart's desires on any one of those platforms. Check us out. Look for us there, The Filmlosophers. Give us a subscribe. Give us a follow. If you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
Yes, we have. We're also live on the socials over at Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. There you can check out all of our recent posts, all of our great little escapades that we talk about, as well as the content such as Spencer's Big Score and Amy's Jane on Scene, which can be found where?
The only place it lives, at Jane on Scene on Instagram. That's usually at the end of the episode.
Well, we had
what
time.
Are you doing?
We had time, okay?
Do we really?
We, you know what? Time is an illusion, according to this movie. So, and you would think that's from a darker movie, but nope, that was from the Super Mario Brothers movie. We have a great show in store as we're going to be talking about this movie in detail. But before we do, there were some trailers that dropped today, and so we figured it was high time to hit up some movie news. Honestly, there's not a lot that we really want to go over, but there is one particular one that really is a big step in the Marvel franchise, and that is the drop of the teaser trailer for The Marvels. Now, if you're not familiar with this this particular property, I believe Amy can go a little bit more into detail because she's a little bit more of the fan.
Yeah, I could.
You
I think.
Could.
I think I could. Do you want a synopsis? Do you want to know where we're
going? Tell me what the comic book like iteration of this, you know, stands for in the MCU.
Well, most of this actually kind of pertains to Kelly Sue DeConnick's run for Captain Marvel, because you are going to end up meeting quite a cornucopia, as it were, of Marvels, because technically right now the MCU has only introduced you to three, and there are a lot more than that. But we're teaming back up with Captain Marvel, so Brie Larson's Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers, Monica Rambeau, who was at one time in the comic books a Captain Marvel. She also has a couple of different names. We'll probably get into that. And the new and up and coming
Miss Marvel.
She's dubbed herself Miss Marvel. Marvel Kamala Khan. So, yeah.
Which, if you've been paying attention to Marvel at any length of time, you know that Marvel has created, you know, the series, the kind of kingdom with both TV and movies. And with TV, they've created the WandaVision series, which gave birth to our Monica Rambeau. She's not Photon. Her mom was Photon.
She's Photon.
She is Photon? Mm-hmm. Okay. So
she's also Pulsar and Photon. Pulsar, Spectrum. Photon. Ultimates 2.
Yeah. And then, of course, you have the Miss Marvel series, which gave birth to Kamala Khan, that iteration. So everybody here got a chance to check out the trailer, right?
Yes.
And so I'm going to be the first one to say I'm not the biggest fan of Captain Marvel. I don't really see. I mean, I can definitely get like the female empowerment, you know, movement behind it. But there's not enough for me to have an interest because I just don't know the character all that well. But that's just me being honest. What was your first impression when you saw it, Spence?
Well, it looks like they're actually trying to have fun with these characters, which I'm for. Because
you mean being on screen with Jude Law wasn't fun enough for you?
No. Yeah, I feel like the funnest part of that first movie was probably the blockbuster in the trailer.
And the Radio Shack.
Yeah. The nostalgia was probably the best part. But like, I feel like Marvel is probably realizing they need to be a bit more adventurous and on the fun side with things, especially with how some of their last few movies has done. So yeah. I'm hoping they've learned something.
No, it's true, because the problem is that their franchise is becoming the problem in itself for superhero movies. Because I feel like the oversaturation, and we've talked about that on the show for some time, that we're going to hit a saturation point with superhero movies to where nobody's going to want to see superhero movies anymore because it's just there's too many of them.
Disney got woke.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. Disney got
woke. Right? That's what kind of podcast this is, right? Yes.
But it's true, because it's like there's so much coming out of Disney right now it's oversaturating both the film and TV market, and it's hard to kind of see any other movie outside of superhero movies. But what do you think, Corey? Because you're obviously on.
I saw the trailer. I wasn't impressed. It's not my cup of tea. I didn't watch the Miss Marvel. I'm not one of those go to Twitter and say Marvel's done. All the movies suck now. Things are terrible.
Yeah.
But I'm not as excited about the movies as much as I once was. That's not to say I'm not really excited for Guardians 3.
Yeah.
But just not a big Miss Marvel person.
I kind of put Captain Marvel and that whole franchise kind of in the same boat as I put the Eternals. Oh. I just don't really care.
Wow.
Like
I mean,
Jesus Christ. This guy.
That's so bad.
Well, the Eternals wasn't great. And Captain Marvel, the first one
really
was
lightly.
Well, no.
The Eternals was never going to hit the demographic that was necessary, much like Jack King Kirby everything he built. I've already said that piece. Ha-cha-cha.
But no, that's the thing, though. It's a property. If you're going to like invest so much money into it and you're going to do all this and that, it has to hit someone's likability factor. Yep. If you're doing all this and you're not going to get a win out of it, then what's the point? You know, and all you're doing is proving all those naysayers about superhero movies and Marvel movies. You're just proving them right. You know, Martin Scorsese is over here dancing over here on top of Robert De Niro's head because someone said a bad thing about the Eternals. So it's like, you know what? I'm starting to become a more discerning Marvel fan because of the fact that, like I said, between the oversaturation and, you know what? I can wait a year or two. I can wait a little longer for another Marvel film. You know, right now I'm like, I wouldn't mind a good like crime thriller. I wouldn't mind a good, you know, but right now everyone's expectations are, you know, the Guardians of the Galaxy movie, the Spider-Man movie, the Kraven movie. Like there's all these things that are on the rise. And it's like, well, I actually go out of my way to look for other trailers that are not like tied to the House of Mouse kind of thing. So
it's getting increasingly harder to do.
Yeah.
Very true. And I think like with this movie in particular, Captain Marvel is, because Phase 5 is sword and, you know, we have shield and saber. So you're going into space and everything else where Captain Marvel and Captain Marvel are very, very big parts of that universe. What ends up happening is that G. Willow Wilson bringing in this Miss Marvel was a flip, like bringing in Miles Morales for Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. It's a new generation. It's exploring and exposing the old things that didn't work and improving upon them. So that's why it seems like it's trying to be more fun and a lot more youthful, which I do appreciate. The one thing that I really, really, and I'm crossing my fingers hoping for, is the reason that Rogue has her, we're going to some X-Men lore, the reason Rogue has her standard like abilities is because she ended up taking them from Miss Marvel, who's now Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel. And I just want her just a little X-Men touch.
But that was during the 70s run. of 80s, X-Men.
Yeah, 70s, 80s run. But like we have, not, I mean, aside from us seeing that beautiful, beautiful cameo in, you know, Doctor Strange and Mom, we haven't had any other X-Men essentially in the MCU, which I really like Rogue. And which, I really like Gambit. And
I mean,
I really want.
We get it. You got a Christmas list. We get it. But I feel like those nods are, you're talking about, you know, Multiverse of Madness. Those nods, all the little extras in the fan service were probably the best thing of those movies. The whole story itself was kind of like really loose and didn't hold a lot of weight. I feel like it's becoming more of a case of quantity over quality right now. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, even the great house of Marvel isn't like, they're still susceptible to, oh, you know, 100%. Falling by the wayside if they keep at it the way they're going. I mean, take a look at the last Marvel film, which was Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Oh, how was that? Was it as bad as everyone says?
It was bad.
Okay.
It's still waiting to be an extra credit episode.
We haven't reviewed it.
Oh, that bad?
It was that bad.
Jeez.
Well, because it was like, you watch it and you're like,
you guys did The Other Guys, I think.
I think we did something ridiculous. We didn't do anything.
It was, I think, Quantumania backed up against Creed, and we picked Creed.
Oh, yeah, Creed 3. Yeah, and that's another prime example. Like, these are the types of movies that are in this next leg. And then on top of the whole Jonathan Majors issues and whatnot going on with him, and
he was in both those franchises, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. And unfortunately, right, like that. Marvel is talking about their like future with Jonathan Majors, since he was a big like villain for the next leg of the saga. So who knows? Let's hope that maybe as things start to clear up a little bit more, because I mean, with Saber, you also get like the introduction into stories like Original Sin. You get introduction to like the Thor storyline where he loses his worthiness. I mean, you start getting into a lot more grand stories, but you have to get there the right way, and there's still a lot to, you know, a lot to be unearthed,
untangled.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
All right, so but yeah, we'll keep our eyes on the skies and seeing what else comes out of Marvel, and if this trailer is even worth kind of continuing talking about, or if the movie's even worth reviewing. Obviously, we're willing to skip over movies because, you know what, whatever. But that does bring us to our main topic of today's evening, and that is our conversation on the Super Mario Brothers movie. This movie came out of Illumination. It's been one of those movies where so many people have been talking about it, and so many people have kind of had negative ideas about it, positive ideas, mostly because of either who's playing Mario, what Mario sounds like, what things look like, the big forehead on Peach, the big backside on Peach. Everybody's got an opinion. So yeah, we're going to dive into that and really kind of unearth what we think about it. But before we do, Spencer, give us that official synopsis goodness.
While working underground to fix a water main, Brooklyn plumbers Mario and brother Luigi are transported down a mysterious pipe and wander into a magical new world. But when the brothers are separated, Mario embarks on an epic quest to find Luigi and help save the newfound universe. With the assistance of a Mushroom Kingdom resident Toad and some training from the strong-willed ruler of the Mushroom Kingdom, Princess Peach, Mario taps into his own power.
Directed by Aaron Horvath and Michael Jenelik, the film stars Chris Pratt, Anya Taylor-Joy, Charlie Day, Jack Black, Keegan-Michael Key, Seth Rogen, and Fred Armisen. A couple key pieces about the film. It did premiere in the 30th anniversary of premiered on the 30th anniversary of Super Mario Brothers from 1993, which starred Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo. So that movie actually came out. That's technically what a lot of people consider the first video game adaptation into film. So unfortunately, it was a huge box office bomb, as most people know. Not to mention, there's been many interviews with Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo. Who, Bob Hoskins has passed away. It's been a few years.
Yeah.
But they both said at length how drunk they were when they did their scenes on that movie.
Wow.
So it's like when you can openly say like, oh yeah, we were totally like hammered when we did that scene and that scene and this scene, you pretty much know that like the movie's not worth moving forward on or giving your best. So, last little bit, the music played during Mario and Luigi's plumbing commercial is actually the theme music of the kids' show, the Super Mario Brothers Super Show, back in 1989, starring Lou Albano as Mario and Danny Wells as Luigi. Did you guys get a chance to ever see that show?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're like, we did that.
Spencer?
No.
You live
in Chicago. It wasn't on.
What?
What do you mean it wasn't on?
It wasn't on my channels.
Spencer.
No, but I was watching Samurai Pizza Cats. Thank you.
Oh. Okay. Well,
Samurai Pizza Cats, though. I mean,
did you grow up in Canada?
No, oh, here. No, here.
Different channel. Different channel.
It sounds like some Canadian ripoff of Biker Mice from Mars,
right?
I love that show too.
Samurai Pizza Cats. It's like the opposite of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So obviously this movie is one of the most recent ones. And as we discuss everything that we talk about, this is your warning. We are going to be talking about spoilers. So if you haven't seen the film, you may want to put a pause here, go check out the movie, and then revisit here as well. If you don't care, like we don't care, then you can listen galore as we're going to be talking about spoilers and whatnot. So your first, last, and only warning for this movie or for this conversation, spoilers. This is essentially a property that we're all very familiar with, whether if we played it on our Super Nintendos or Nintendos, you know, or every Nintendo product actually from that moment forward, Game Boy, Switch, you know, Wii, GameCube, 64. There was a Mario for every single one of those.
Yeah. Sorry, my face was because I was like, on Wii was gross. You don't want to play Mario on Wii.
That what?
Was
not wait.
I didn't like it on Wii.
Oh.
Go ahead, Spencer. Go ahead.
Super Mario Galaxy was like fantastic.
That's the only one I haven't played.
That
wait, what are you talking about then?
You could play Super Mario Brothers. Like,
are you talking about like the updated content version, mm-hmm, where they made like the 8-bit version 3D looking, so it was side to side platformer? I think it was just called Mario Wii or something.
Yep.
Is that what you said?
Yep. That's why Corey is awesome.
No, I remember like Super Mario Galaxy. I didn't like the sequel, but I liked the first one.
I didn't play the sequel.
The sequel wasn't all that great.
Nintendo has a tendency of putting out games that are sequels, and you're like, this isn't going to be good. And you can just see it coming from a mile away for some reason.
Like that, what was that one that just recently came out? The Mario and the Rabbids or something? Mario plus.
Okay, that's different.
Yeah. That's essentially like an RPG kind of like.
That's in its own thing.
It's turn based system with like Rabbids.
It's more of like, hey, Ubisoft, you want to do some stuff with Nintendo characters? And that's what happened in that game.
It's like, hey, Ubisoft, you want to do something other than nothing?
I played the first one. It was actually pretty hilarious.
Really?
Yeah, because like there was this rabbit version of Peach. Like they like all got copied. So there's regular Peach and then Rabbit Peach. Rabbit Peach just walks up to Peach, looks at her dress, picks it up, and just goes, bleh, and it's like, this is her to her face. It was hilarious.
That sounds interesting.
Interesting.
I really want to check with you guys, like, what was like the icon for you? What was the iconic Mario game of your childhood? Let's start with Corey.
Oh, easy. Super Mario World on the Super NES.
Yeah.
That was easily the one that I spent the most amount of time on. I still will beat that game probably once a year. I'll pull it up on the Switch, or I'll find a ROM or do something to beat that game. And I love the nod to it where they were shooting the commercial and they were, you know, pretending to fly in the shitty green screen and they had the capes around the neck.
Yeah, yeah.
That was lit.
There you go. What about you, Spence?
Same, actually. Super Mario World was my first Mario game, and like for my first console too.
Mm.
Yeah.
Did you ever buy, like, did you ever have a regular Nintendo?
No.
Okay, so like if you had ever bought like the Nintendo, it came with that whole like Mario and Duck Hunt
kind
of.
Yeah.
So I remember that was like my first iteration of that. And so, what about you, Ames? Is it Mario Wii?
No, thank the Lord, no.
It's the latest one on the Switch.
No, I haven't even, and it's not Sunshine Paper whatever Mario.
Hey, don't know Paper Mario.
No, there was also like Sunshine Mario something as well. For me, the one that I remember completing the first time was Mario 64.
Oh, that was my second pick.
Yeah.
That's the one I actually completed, and I was like, yes, I'm an adult now.
Well, that's my choice as well, because like when you play Mario 64, it's like a totally different type of Mario. You actually see the backside of Mario instead of just a side profile, and you're exploring worlds and whatnot. And the great thing about it is its replayability, because not only would you clear a particular like land or painting But then you would also have the ability to go back in there and clear it out again for like progression of like something really great, like more stars that you would get out of it. So it was just a game that you could sit with and literally just spend most of your time on one particular painting or land and go over and over and over until you're like shooting yourself across the land in the little cannons in the hills.
Mario's like the Hulk Hogan of video games. Yeah. He's the pinnacle key everybody from my grandma to my mom to and now my kids, because of this movie, are all gonna know who Mario is, and that is video games. And he did it once with the Mario you were talking about, mm-hmm. Super Mario Bros. On the NES.
Yeah.
And then it was the most innovative, best game on the Super NES. And then it went to N64 and completely changed video games, which is why when you go through and you look at the top 100 lists, video games that they do every single year, every year in the top five, you got to have Mario 64.
Oh, at least, yes. At least. Because it's so groundbreaking for what it was doing during the time. Like, not many game systems outside of like the Dreamcast were incorporating like 3D polygons and so forth into their gameplay. So now you had not only just one dimension of character, but you had three dimensions.
They did this again with Mario Kart too. With Mario Kart, you know, it was a brand. I think F-Zero was the first game, mm-hmm. you know, and it completely changed what people thought were programmers thought was possible on that platform. By the way, you know, if you guys really want some extra credit after class, go check out Gaming Historian.
I talk about that all the time
on YouTube. Yeah, mm-hmm. Incredible series, and they have one about the Mario movie where they go really into depth about all those stories. There's one about Mario Kart and how just technologically it even pushed the barriers, and you can get an insight to how Nintendo's psyche was when they were creating games and why they were so successful and why they are the way they are today. And this movie and it's the success is the next step. It's incredible.
Yeah. Without a doubt. I don't know if a lot of people know this, but Nintendo, well, if you've been following with what Nintendo's been coming out during their like Nintendo Directs, but Nintendo essentially created a whole film studio sub company out of their main company, which was what you saw at the beginning of this film. They were so keen on creating film out of their properties that they only thought of doing it outside of their own studio, but they didn't know how to properly create that. They didn't know how to create a film or franchise it, or not franchise, but like market it and so forth. And so they had to partner with someone. And so Illumination was the next thing that came in.
Perfect choice.
Exactly. Yeah.
Disney is so woke.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to partner with Disney.
You want to go with... But Illumination, they're brilliant. Mm-hmm. Maybe they annoy you because they make Minions 1 and Minions 2 and Minions 10 or whatever.
Yeah.
But somehow they got those little shitheads to be Christmas characters.
Yeah.
You go down the street, you see inflatable Minions somehow.
Everywhere. Well, and the fact that the recognition of that brand is so keen, like it's so on point for them that they... kids know them immediately by that little yellow with the blue, you know, overalls, and it's instantaneous like recognition. And so because of that, their brand is like set for life.
They hacked the baby algorithm.
Especially with and I hate to use this word, but the genius behind how they created the language for the Minions.
It's like six different languages squashed together.
It essentially is. And it's like people are there were people who are trying to break it down, trying to understand it. You have kids who are trying to mimic it. It's like a whole pariah on itself. So partnering with someone like Illumination just was like a match made in heaven.
Yep.
And creating this was their next step to seeing if this is going to essentially blow up and become something big. What's the best franchise or what's the best studio to do it through and partner with for consistent, you know.
Very true.
So talking about the film, let's talk first impressions. So right outside the gate, once you saw the film, whether if you were with kids or weren't with kids, what was your first thoughts as soon as the movie was over? I want to start with Spencer.
I think there are going to be two trains of thoughts this movie. And it's going to be you were a kid and you grew up with these characters or you weren't. And I feel like...
And you wish you were.
I feel like the people who are in the first camp are going to feel very differently about this movie than people who are in the second camp. Because, like, I was coming out of this movie, I was like, I miss Funky Kong. Was he in this movie?
Yes.
And I was like, that's not even a question that's going to come up to someone else.
So really quick, and I think we need to make sure we belabor a point in this episode.
We need to address the Kong in the room.
We need to address just the Kong in this room. Spencer is without a doubt probably the biggest Donkey Kong fan I know.
I love Donkey Kong.
And so if he does get a little heated during the course of this conversation, it's just because his passions rise to the surface when he talks about things like that, i.e. this previous statement he just made, because I'm pretty sure the majority of it is going to be based around.
Well, I have a confession to make too.
Okay.
Donkey Kong is my homie.
Nice.
That's definitely.
There's three, there's three at the table because he is also your homie as well.
He is.
I love Donkey Kong. It helps because me and Eddie both kind of look like him.
That's true. from the hair to the body to everything else. Like,
I think
you know,
your tie's on the floor. I'm not even making a joke. There's a literal tie on the floor.
I am not going to put that on right now. all right. So we get what you're saying, and there's going to be a couple of trains of thoughts you're going to be unlaying as we talk further.
I'm a bit of a fake fan because I really only played Donkey Kong Country, but you are true blue.
The only one I've missed is 64 because
which
I did
the
not.
Only one I
which one I hear is was the worst know. Of the bunch. So I think you're okay.
It's how you started. Like that was the only one that I played because I didn't get a chance to. Well, I briefly skimmed over Country, but I never played it. But I played 64. Mm-hmm. So when there's all these moments inside the movie that we see that's pertaining to the Kongs, I was like, I know what's going on.
Yeah, I was so part. I was like, because again, I'm in my own world and I'm a super nerd. I was like, how are there this many references to one game out of six?
Excellent.
You're really fired up for this, aren't you?
Yeah, it's this is where I'm at.
What about you, Corey? Right out the gate, what were your first thoughts?
I was very happy. I got everything I wanted out. So I got to preface. I went at a 9:30 a.m. showing with a 2-year-old.
There
so
you go.
But I think that's how you should watch the movie.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's how it was meant to be.
Yeah, you got to have a little hype man. You got to have somebody who's like in there and they're like, oh my God, it's Donkey Kong. Like going off so you can be like, heck yeah. Yeah, little kid.
Yeah.
So
they were hyped. I thought it was great. I thought that I was a little tainted going in because, you know, I went a week after it came out and there was, you know, I saw the reviews, the Rotten Tomatoes critic score had it super low.
But
the fan score had it high. And it makes sense why now.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually reached out to a friend of ours, mine and Corey's, Joey. And checked with him because he had seen it already.
Oh, so I was the backup to Joey. Oh.
No.
Joey said no to being on the show.
He called you out.
So I asked him because he had seen it the night before.
Oh, okay.
And so I was like, you know.
Just because he saw it before me?
I was asking him his opinion. and I was like, hey, you saw the movie. You know how we roll. Like, is it actually as bad as people are saying? Or is it just something that the critics are kind of adding that negative spin because of whatever reason? He goes, oh, it's actually really good. It's actually good. You should definitely check it out. So so thankfully, you know, it's crazy because Corey and I, you know, we run in a lot of the same circles of people who, you know, are actual professional film critics. And some of them will say, you know, oh, the film's not that great, but other people will like it. Other people will say, oh, the film's not that great, but then they'll say, oh, it's good. So you got to kind of balance like what you hear and who you hear it from.
Yeah.
And especially when it comes to movies like this, where it's not meant to be like this super complicated movie. It's just a fun kids movie with some grown up, you know, Easter eggs because we lived that life. We had that as part of our history. So Ames.
Yes.
First impression without like.
Without just making noises and staring at you guys randomly. And
exactly.
Squeaking. Preferably.
Preferably. But this is the first time in a long time Corey has seen me just make random faces at a microphone. I actually really enjoyed it. And I remember because I saw it twice. I did the first time with these guys, which I kept trying to turn to Spencer and Spencer was staring at the screen. And I was like, okay, can't be excited and stare at Spencer. And then the second time I took the kids, it was a 9 a.m. showing and the entire place was packed out with kids. And the older one, she plays Mario. She knows Mario. The littler one is aware of Mario, but hasn't started playing yet. It was like, it's probably one of the best things being a parent, being able to be like, hello, tell me if this movie is good, small person. And they're like, it was fun.
Yeah, getting a chance to see it was really interesting being able to see it with kids there because normally, and I'm pretty sure majority of people here can attest to this, I'm not a big fan of seeing movies where kids are really noisy and
underselling this so much.
Oh, that does remind me. 9 a.m. showing, my littlest person, the first joke that all of the little kids were laughing at, she straight up goes, shh. Wow. Like yeah. Makes everybody. A lot of sense. Wow. And yeah. I'm like, oh no. It's dads.
So I mean, you know what, if I'm paying for a movie and I can't focus because there's a little kid crying or whatever, I mean, of course I'm gonna, you know, flip him the bird and send him out the room.
What you do know? You expect a baby to do?
What do you expect a baby to do in a movie theater? Why are they there? Tell
because
me.
The parent couldn't get a babysitter,
then
or
they don't deserve to come
cinema.
Out yet. Hey. They have to wait. They gotta wait.
Manners.
They gotta manners. No. So going into this movie, one of the actual unique positives about it was that there was a bunch of kids that were there. There was a whole row of boys right behind me. And these kids were like, they were like us when we were kids, like, yo, oh my God, that's Donkey Kong. Like total loud, obnoxious. And at first I was like, wow, huh, are you kidding me? Come on. But then I'm like, Yeah, that is Donkey Kong.
No,
yeah.
No. These kids don't get a pass. They got to change your mind.
They got a pass. They definitely did. And it was like, it was just a different viewpoint for a movie like this. Mm, like yeah. if I'm watching like The Whale or something, or if I'm going to see, you know, of course whale? I'm like, first off, what are you kids doing in this movie? And secondly, why are you even, that's not Donkey Kong. So that's Brendan Fraser. It'd be a different boat, but this is a kids movie. And like it added to the vibe, so I was appreciative of that, and I can definitely say that I don't know if I'm better for the situation of it. I appreciate it during that. I don't want it to happen in other movies, but you know, who knows, anything can happen. But moving forward, talking about the story of this film, one of the biggest things that we actually get a chance to kind of compare this movie to is our childhood through all the games that we've played, all the different, you know, iterations of whether if it's Donkey Kong, Super Mario, Princess Peach. You know, we haven't gotten a chance to see Wario or Waluigi yet, but we got to see like even Toad have like a really major role in the overall Super Mario story. I have to say, one of the biggest things that I did appreciate about this movie, I earnestly thought, and this sounds like a bad thing. No, it kind of sounds bad. I earnestly thought okay. that Keegan-Michael Key as Toad wasn't going to work for me.
And
I have to admit, I would not have seen the success or the biggest part of this success towards this movie if he wasn't in that role.
Really?
Like, I liked him at it. I actually liked Keegan-Michael Key in that role.
I thought he was great too, but I thought what was incredible is that if I didn't know it was him, I would not have had any idea.
Yeah.
Which I think is like true voice act. There's Jack Black,
yeah.
which is like you pay him to be Jack Black.
Exactly.
You know, you pick up that voice, but Toad, I would not have been able to tell you that was him, but it was fantastic.
He was good. And mind you, maybe it's for the fact that he doesn't sound like Keegan-Michael Key that made it so much of an enjoyable, like, I don't know. I don't want to be rude to the guy.
I think it's impressive. Like, it's actually impressive. Like that's true. That should be true voice act. I think that should be your goal.
Well, oh yeah. That actually, on an interview that they did, and they were showing it on the news this morning, he rings up in the interviews when they were doing his press tour. He loves that nobody knows that it's him until later. And they're like, oh shoot, it's you. He's like, that's a badge of honor for me. I like that nobody knows that it's me until they find it out.
Yeah.
Because that's more fun for me to do whatever I'm doing. And it's like, you like it? That's awesome. You don't like it? Okay, that's fine. And you still don't know. So I'm like, yes. Excellent.
And I mean, I liked his whole role in the film. I liked what he was doing. I liked the character, ultimately. I liked what the character was doing, the whole idea of giving more power to Toad, even having that kind of vibe of like Captain Toad to a certain extent in the film. So I thought he really stood out to me. I think one of the bigger issues that a lot of people had or still have with this film was essentially whether or not Chris Pratt could pull it together to be the Mario that a lot of people wanted.
Yeah.
I mean,
let's start with the one person who is not humming.
Yeah, I need like, to think.
What were your thoughts of Chris Pratt playing the role of Mario for you?
Oh, okay. You're getting into a really complicated subject.
Okay.
Because he kind of fell into the background for me, which is kind of crazy, seeing as how he's Mario.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, there's just so much other stuff going on with characters that, like, to be honest, I kind of forgot about Chris Pratt. Like, Peach started taking a lot of my attention
mm-hmm.
because, like, one, I actually kind of liked the voice acting that Anya
Taylor-Joy.
Yeah, she was doing. Also, I've never seen a version of Peach, not to be mean to Princess Peach, but I've never seen a version of her this competent. Normally, it's
you're
like,
not wrong.
Oh no, Bowser stole the whole castle this time. And like, Mario, like, you know, it's mostly just Peach screaming. And then there was this one time in Sunshine where Bowser's like, hey, here's your kid. And she's like, I have a kid. And I'm like, you should know of anyone. Like, so like for Chris Pratt, like with all that other stuff going on, like kind of like, I don't remember him. Gonna be real honest.
That's
like,
not a bad thing.
Like, I don't remember.
I mean, if the movie is Super Mario Brothers, I think that is kind of a big deal to kind of
exemplify
the title role.
I have stated before, I have been Pratt burned out. Aside from the drama that he has put out on the internet that everyone has decided to go after, there was such a compounding of all things Pratt and all movies Pratt, and we had that talk about
why
Jurassic
does everybody
World.
Hate him. I honestly don't know.
The internet, why, or just in general?
The internet wise.
There's a couple of reasons. I mean,
we could talk about it off air because I've hashed it on the air before.
I mean,
I'll go listen. I could go back and.
I mean, the gist of it is
he's
that
he's not woke.
No, he's like a professed Christian.
Yeah.
He essentially left his then wife Anna Faris, which wasn't a bad thing,
and their kid Jack,
who happens to have Down syndrome.
He doesn't have Down syndrome. He was a premature kid, and he's had a lot of medical complications. But so when he got married to the new Schwarzenegger wife, and they had a baby, he posted a seemingly
I do remember this thing, but there was nothing wrong with that. All he said was he was happy.
That it was a healthy, and people thought it was a dig instead of
that's
saying,
that's stupid.
Yeah.
That dude loves his fucking kid, dude. Everybody who was mad must not have had kids because
or if they had kids, they felt that it was like a dig at Anna Faris because there had been such, like, she's pulled out of the limelight entirely. Like, she's taking care of him. That's their thing. Power to them as parents.
Which, I mean, they now live like 5 miles away from each other.
So Jack can go see her.
It's such a common thing, though, to be happy. You have if you say, I have a happy, healthy baby, it doesn't matter if the last one or the last two or three, like,
well, and but that's the thing that people are like, they're like, oh, you're digging at Anna Faris, you're digging at your son Jack. Jesus and then Christ. Now because there's so much spin on it that he's like, Jack's gonna see this when he's older and he's gonna ask those questions, and y'all just made me look really dirty. My thing was between that going on where I'm like, I don't, whatever's going on, y'all do it.
I don't like what he did to my Jurassic World franchise.
He was just compounding, and it wasn't like fun Star-Lord. It was just like, it was a lot of Pratt in a very small amount of time, and I don't know if I can fully blame Marvel for it, but it's a lot of Pratt. It's too much Pratt for my plate.
I think they didn't need to give Pratt this role was one thing that I thought, and I think they knew. I mean, you gotta have expected the criticisms, and he wasn't the only man for the job.
No.
They could have easily went down the list. I'm sure there was a second, third, fourth option. They could have pulled just any generic.
Yeah. They could have gotten Charles. He was in the movie.
He was.
He sounded fine as their dad.
That was I don't know.
Charles Martin. One thing I've realized is that Charles Martinet is good for the small spurts.
He's eccentric.
But I could not hear the entire amount of dialogue that Mario did Mario voice.
No. That would have been hilarious. Clearly not. That would have been crazy.
I'm just saying, I wouldn't have been able to deal with that. Like, it's a me, Mrs. Peabody, Princess Peach. Like, that all day long in that movie. Nope, I'm good. I would have, had to take a step out.
See, and I think the thing for me was that, again, I was all pratted out. And in this, John Leguizamo actually has come out and he's boycotting the movie because there's not any diversity. And he's like, look, I understand.
Wait, isn't Keegan-Michael Key?
He's talking about the brothers in particular, that they have no Italian.
I remember that boycott.
It's still going. It's still going.
Talking about his version. There's no Italians
mind you, it was TMZ and I read this article and I was like,
and Bob Hoskins is English.
Yeah.
Which,
so
that I think would have been even funnier, to be very honest.
I mean, what, were they mad because Dennis Hopper wasn't an actual reptile? Like, it doesn't.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. It's It was ridiculous.
But I agree with Corey. I think we could have pulled somebody out of a random spot in the hat, yeah, and they could have lied and said it was Chris Pratt, and then surprise, it wasn't.
Or just give anybody an opportunity for that. Like, right now, we're in the stage where, yes, you have Chris Pratt's, like, celebrity. You have Ryan Reynolds' celebrity, who's still carrying them for the amount of time. Like, giving these younger actors and performers opportunities to kind of rise to the occasion wouldn't be a bad thing. I mean, Charlie Day, there's a new trailer that's out called Fool's Paradise, where Charlie Day from Everybody, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Sunny, oh yeah. I almost said Sunny with a Chance. Wrong one, yeah.
Wrong one. There's a movie he's directed and written that's coming out soon called Fool's Paradise, where he's performing in it as well. And it looks good. And it's like, that's cool. That's something I want to see. I want to see more of, like, the more unorthodox people coming up. I mean, that's how we got Jordan Peele. Nobody thought that the comedic actor from Mad TV was going to be blowing us all away with, like, you know, bedsheet aliens and stuff like that in movies.
They looked like an orchid.
It also looked like, you know,
well, speaking of even
female reproductive organs, too.
Very true. I mean, it's all enticing and while you stare at it. But we look at Charlie Day. He had even less of a speaking role and a presence. I think he had, like, one of the smallest parts for a quote-unquote main character in there. Mm. And I was kind of like, bro, aren't you mad? Like, just a little bit? Because I know everybody's like, oh, Luigi's, like, second string. But come on.
Yeah, but not that much of a second string. I feel like the movie was trying to rebalance itself from, like, the traditional, like, Princess Peach is in trouble, we need to go save her. Mm. To, like, oh, let's make Luigi in trouble. But then it's like, why on earth did you get Charlie Day if you're going to do that? Because, yeah, like, he barely talks.
I know, and it was just mean.
Yeah.
But I do agree. Like, anybody else could have come in. Like, we're seeing a lot of new up-and-coming actors in different roles. Especially, and I never want to really praise the House of Mouse, but Disney is doing a lot of work to bring in new performers, new characters, or new actors and actresses to high profile films, like with what we're seeing, like with The Little Mermaid.
Oh, yeah.
What is her name? Haley Berry? No.
Yes. She's a Berry, but not a Hallie.
Yeah.
I think it's Haley.
We're seeing, you know, completely new character or new performers in the new Wendy, Peter Pan and Wendy movie.
Yeah, and you scoffed at that.
Oh, I don't think it's going to be good. I just give them the credit, the fact that they're bringing in different people.
They have to bring in different people. Everybody else, no, because Jude Law is Captain Hook. No, you can't say that. You can't say that. He looks like a hot mess.
He does.
Oh, Spencer, if you see a still of this man, no. I mean, it would make everybody who's going through male pattern baldness rethink their life choices. This comb over, Corey, this comb over is a nightmare. And it's on Jude Law, of all people.
Poor guy.
I know. It's stringy and gross.
So then what were, so Corey, what were your thoughts about Chris Pratt as Mario?
I just thought he was fine.
Just the bare minimum?
Just fine. It didn't take me out of the movie. I wasn't boycotting him, and I didn't go see the movie because of him. So I had no expectations. He did a good job. I didn't stop at some point and be like, man, why does he sound like that?
Yeah.
So it was fine. Do I think Al Pacino could have done a better job? Yeah. Do I think John C. Reilly would have been a little bit better?
Wow.
Come on, man.
That was a good one.
That was a really good one.
Man, now I'm wondering who else would have been a good.
That sounds like it might be a roundtable question.
I'll put it down for later. Were there any other highlight characters? I know, Spencer, you mentioned about Anya Taylor-Joy.
Bowser, dear Lord, did Jack Black just knock it out of the park?
He went
that hard for this character. Let's just be honest.
Like, just the ability to switch from terrifying to hilarious just at a pin drop is just perfection. I loved pretty much everything they did. I kind of hope they make more movies with him in it in more of a Paper Mario fashion where he's teamed up with Mario and he's just annoyed he's there the whole day.
What did you think?
Oh, no. I have a deep and abiding love and respect for Jack Black, bordering on, I crush on the man. I have no shame.
Me too.
It's true.
He's dreamy. This was so unexpected, and the pivots and the points that he used for comedic timing were so well placed that I'm like, yes, yes, continue. Please continue. Like the entire rock sequence right at the beginning where he announces, you know, we've got the superstar and we're marrying Princess Peach. And everybody's like, hold up. And he's like, no, like, I'm committed, yeah, bro. We're going. Yeah, the one Koopa.
The one Koopa.
Good Koopa. Give him a raise. But yeah, yeah, just I swoon for that man. And
oh, yeah. Like, it's amazing. And I don't want to say it like with a jinx or anything, but it's amazing to still see Jack Black like perform with the same amount of energy as like all the way back in like Nacho Libre or like School of Rock or all those other earlier films, like to see him still be exuberantly him, mm-hmm, even in as a voice acting role, it's refreshing. Cause like, I want to see Jack Black do so many other things. I mean, for God's sakes, we got a chance to see him in the Star Wars canon
in Mandalorian.
So, I mean, there's nothing really stopping him from doing anything he wants. Just because he's that iconic, I feel.
Yeah. And he was a chonky Bowser. It was cute. He was a little thicker than usual. I mean, not saying I noticed on the re-release of the Bowser toys when Spencer went in. I took a trip to that ill-fated Toys R Us. Yeah.
Do you want to elaborate a little bit more? That's kind of seedy.
I know, it sounds super seedy, right? So Sacramento, the downtown Macy's has a faux Toys R Us, right? Yeah, they sketched out like a little section for toys. Spencer, myself, and Eddie had gone and seen a movie at the movie theater over there. And Eddie had to go to the bathroom. And Spencer, I'm like, Spencer, we're going to Toys R Us. And we went in. It was really sad. But they had released a small collection of new Super Mario Brothers movie like items. And that Bowser was the thickest Bowser I have seen. Like, he had some straight chonk on him. So I told Spencer, and he's like,
yeah.
He's like, I don't see it. And then I turned him and he goes, oh, I see it. And I was like, yes, he's so thick.
Yeah, it's I really don't have any comment on the thickness of that particular reptile. But no, it just, you look at somebody like Jack Black, and Jack Black has done everything from like serious roles to adding comedic like timing to regular roles to being the star of anything that he's come out into. Like, he's played the gambit for most of his acting performances. So I'm hoping that the last time we really saw him shine in any kind of voice acting role was as Poe in Kung Fu Panda.
And he didn't have to go that hard either.
Well, I mean, he still went hard because he was like, he did all the hi-yas and the whatever whatnots. And you take that first Kung Fu Panda movie and you have Jack Black starring opposite of like Dustin Hoffman, Angelina Jolie,
Jackie Chan,
David Cross, Seth Rogen, Lucy Liu, Ian McShane.
That's
like, if you took away the animated aspect of that movie and just gave that cast list, you're like, which one of these doesn't belong here? Like, you would almost assume like Jack Black is kind of the outlier, but he fits perfectly within that role. And that's just the nature of Jack Black. So was there any other outstanding performer or anybody else that you guys want to highlight?
Seth Rogen.
That was so good. You were two for two, I swear.
That was good.
That was the big pop that I had. Like, I dropped my spaghetti in the movie when he was pummeling Mario and then pulled up with that laugh.
Hold up. Why did you have spaghetti in the theater?
Did you see the price of popcorn, bro?
So expensive.
He's like, really quick, hold on, sweetheart. I got to stop by the fridge to grab last night's spaghetti.
Throw put some it in your pockets.
There you go. Just a pocket spaghetti. There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
I thought he crushed that. It was the same Jack Black thing where perfect casting, and you just let the guy be themselves.
Oh yeah,
let the person that Bowser was Jack Black 100%, mm-hmm, from the song, which also, you know, in the theater full of kids, got the biggest laugh,
mm-hmm,
for me was the Peaches song.
Yeah,
yes. Crowd went wild. For me, I was the one guy who just when Seth Rogen did his laugh, because Seth Rogen's a big, you know, pothead.
Oh,
that was good to see a little bit of weed culture make its way
in. There you go. Like, that's what they're here for, right, Dad? It's like, that was, at first I couldn't tell. I didn't recognize it immediately. It was Seth Rogen until while during their battle, he does a laugh and I'm like, there he is. That's Seth Rogen.
Really? I could hear what he was like, Dad, look at me. And he's doing the dancing pecs. I was like, it's totally Seth. Well,
I mean, it sounded similar, but nowadays, like, a lot of people have like different, like, they have similar sounding points in their voice. And I didn't want to immediately gravitate to, oh, it's Seth Rogen. But
it's that, Seth Rogen.
The laugh gave it away instantaneously.
Yeah, I think for me, at first I was like, I don't know how I feel about Seth Rogen. And then once I was in the movie and actually saw him as Donkey Kong, I was like, this actually makes a lot of sense.
As soon as I saw the casting news, I was like, bam, perfect casting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because absolutely. Like I feel like Donkey Kong should be voiced by a like pothead. Yeah. Because, like, that kind of fits in with his character. He doesn't care unless it's about his bananas or his family, anything else, whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So... that's really funny.
He was good. Yeah. I mean, that's just the thing. I want to bring up somebody who is like on the low. Nobody would know the guy that played, I think he's comic. He's the Magic Koopa.
Yeah.
He's actually the guy that's the voice of Cleveland from.
Yeah. Family Guy?
From Family Guy. Hmm. But he's also Captain Gantu from Lilo and Stitch. So I can be like, hey, it's acceptable. But he did a really good job in the weird spaces.
What's the name of this?
Kevin something Richardson.
Oh, Kevin Michael Richardson.
There you go.
Yeah, Kevin Michael Richardson actually played the Joker for a little bit of time during the Batman.
Oh, that's right.
The in-between Batman series. I forget offhand, but.
Not Brave and Bold. Or was it the Batman?
It might have been Brave and the Bold.
But yeah, the moments that we saw him where he shows up the first time and he announces the King of the Koopas, but then that entire practice for your proposal sequence was brilliantly done. He had very small parts, but he still carried like such a great weight. And I loved the sound because it was bridging right between, like when he comes in to break the news right after the Peaches song, and they're playing the music, he's like, when Jack Black goes, Jim, with me. I'm like, oh no, it's all going down. It's going to be bad. And that sequence was great. The proposal sequence was great. And then he had another one where it was just like this really weird moment, and he sounded much like, he gave me Igor vibes. And I couldn't look away. So I think that's, you know, again, top-notch voice acting in just really random spots.
Oh, he was Jimbo from the Boss Baby Back in Business. Why did you start with that?
Because Boss Baby Back in Business is currently outlawed in my house because it created a lot of sass. God.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I'm on this guy's IMDb page, mm-hmm. and it's taken me like four full swipes up like the cursor,
the man,
just to get out of the 2020s.
Yeah, the
he is busy.
He's doing the work, and he's good at it.
Yeah, and I mean, if you... Kevin Michael Richardson is one of those guys who is the very subtle... voice actor that brings a lot of that roundedness to your cast. He just seems to be like a jack of all trades when it comes
to
voice
acting.
You
gotta have a vet on the team coming off the bench.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
Every time.
The guy is Mr. Dinkles in Trolls. Come on. Mm. Like all those Trolls movies. So he's just going,
meow. I mean, dang. I mean, and he's got video game voice acting roles like Ratchet and Clank and so forth, Kingdom Hearts.
Were you guys angry that Peach was so badass? I saw there was some outrage on social media about her being too much of a hashtag girl boss.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There is a big stink.
People are mad. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, she kicked too much ass in that movie.
I hadn't heard.
Really? You didn't?
Nope.
Corey, expound.
Well, when you crawl the dark side of YouTube and conservative YouTube, you know, to stay away from the woke,
the
woke mob. It made a lot of people angry that she wasn't the damsel in distress.
Mm.
They feel like they made her too OP, which overpowered in the gaming community. But that stuff pisses me off.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, man. Like, if you look at the movie, maybe if you want to talk about the lack of diversity in the movie, there was a distinct lack of like women in the movie.
Yeah.
And if you're only gonna put one woman in the movie and you want it to be for kids, you got to make that woman a badass.
Yeah. And you have to make that character like just somebody who other young girls can aspire to be. Like that's the overall goal.
As a hashtag girl dad now, I never thought about it until I had a girl. And she loves Blaze and the Monster Machines on Nickelodeon.
Oh,
and
righteous, dude.
A lot of the early episodes, it's just the boy. And, you know, as a dad, I'm like, that's cool. But, you know, like, where's the girl power?
Where's the diversity?
And sure enough, they added a character named Gabby, who's like this badass mechanic who always comes and saves the day. And Mara automatically all over that character. When she got the Monster Machine toys in her car, she's like, we got to go get Gabby to fix my tires. And, you know, it's like, that's what really was the trigger. And so when I saw the Mario movie and that she was a badass, it's like, good.
Yeah.
Because, and the people who get mad, the movie was not for you.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
The movie was for children. Yep. They threw as many fucking awesome Easter eggs for you as possible. You know, I was just counting Easter eggs. Mm-hmm. I almost missed the plot the first time because I'm just, oh, wow, that's a move from Smash. That's his up B. Like, yeah. What the, you know, during the fight scenes. They did it so good.
Yeah.
From all my years on Video Game Bang, you know, working with Emma, the big lesson I got was, you know, not everything is for you.
Yeah.
And people are going to get mad and you can complain about it as much as you want. But this was a movie for children and they needed bad guys who were still not scary. Because that was my biggest fear going to the movie. It was like, fuck, it's going to scare her and she's going to want to leave the theater. But no, they did a perfect job making Jack Black lovable and still kind of intimidating.
Yeah.
They made a strong female character for her to look up to. Her favorite thing from the whole, her only takeaway from the movie was that Bowser wore binoculars.
Oh,
he used binoculars for 2.5 seconds and she got binoculars for Easter and just, I got binoculars like Bowser.
That's the best.
That's who the movie was for.
There you go. That's who the movie was for. Exactly. And I honestly, I haven't paid attention to any of the news of whatever's going on, but I agree with Corey. It's like, if you're somebody who's going to make the argument about a animated film and a character who can give like just a figure role for young girls to look up to and to actually aspire to or to even play in their like pretend time and whatnot, why would you want to fight that? Like, why would you want to argue against that? It doesn't matter if Peach had all the abilities and was giving Mario like the whole second go ahead. Like, what's wrong with that? Why does the power dynamic have to always be on one side? And why do you have to fight for that in films all the time?
I thought everybody had their moment to shine.
Yeah.
Like some kids are scared of shit. Some little pussy kids, you know? And those kids had Luigi to look up to. You can be strong in the moment you need to.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, Mario was, you know, he wasn't the alpha.
No.
But he was fish out of water. How's he going to come down into the, you know, world and just all of a sudden be, you know, the man?
Yeah.
He had to learn. And then when the situation came for and he needed to be the star, he came through in that the last half and carried the movie.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's the biggest thing is that this franchise as a whole, or this universe as a whole, over 8 million copies sold, like for the Mario games in general, it needs to have, like, I can be very honest, I didn't like playing Princess Peach for almost anything. Smash Brothers was like how I learned Kirby and Princess Peach because I had the float ability, but I didn't want to. If I wanted to be OP, I would not play those characters, which for me, looking at this film, I was like, right on, girl, do whatever you gotta do. And it was never a question of her incapability to lead. It was the fact she's like, look, the sequence when literally they're like, they're going to leave and all the toads are around her and it's her and Mario and they're like, we're going to go save you. And they're like, who's he? And he's like, not important. And I'm like, yes,
yeah,
that's it. Like, this was going to happen. The sequence of events were going to happen whether Mario and Luigi were there or not, which means and shows that not only was Peach capable, but she was going to kick ass in the process.
Yeah.
And she came to get down and dirty. And I loved seeing it because it's more girls that are in that environment that are being forced into a dress scenario and you have to be a damsel in distress. You do not have that option where she's like, you can wear a dress and do whatever the hell you want. Like, go.
Yeah.
So it was really encouraging for me. Initially, I thought Anya Taylor-Joy was a little bit too soft when she first started talking. And then she put her money where her mouth was as a voice actor. And I was like, okay, you got me. Like, I love seeing her live action. And I was like, oh, girl, you fine. Let's go.
Yeah. And I think that's part of that element of taking something that's routinely in a certain space and a certain time and giving it a fresh makeover. We've been playing Super Mario games for God knows how long, and the majority of them have always been Mario goes to beat the bad guy to save the princess. Mm-hmm. And it's like, why does that have to still maintain nowadays? Like, why can't, like, girls when they play, like, young girls when they play those kinds of games, that's all they're seeing. They're like, okay, well, she is the person who has to be saved. I am the Princess Peach in this scenario. I have to always be saved. I can't do it on my own. Giving opportunity to for young girls to see that these characters don't have to stay within their stereotypical, you know, forms.
You mean in a tower?
Stuck in a tower, you know, needing to be saved or whatnot.
Trapped in a glass box, like, kissed by strangers.
Throughout this entire movie, there wasn't one single point where I thought Princess Peach needed to be saved.
Mm.
Like, at any point, even when it got, like, really dire towards the tail end of the film.
She showed up in that wedding dress, man.
That's what I was about to mention. That was brilliant. Yeah. Like, when she was, like, got, and, like, she was, like, being forced to do something, she still had a backup plan. I'm like, where has this been this whole time? I'd love to see more of this person in games.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, and that's, I think that was probably one of my favorite parts, was seeing her continually evolve through the entire thing. And even at the end, like, they make mention that, oh, they like, it's more, they play more of Mario is infatuated with her and Bowser's infatuated in her than she's like, yes, I want to be with whomever. There was no direct tie to you have to get married, which as a now adult woman, I'm like, oh, thank God. Because anytime you can build relationships within film and the two main characters or main characters as a whole, they don't end up together at an altar, no offense to Bowser in this junction, it's refreshing. Because that means it's like, we're going to be buddies and whatever grows out of this grows out of this. But if we don't get together, like, cool, whatever. And it's really empowering to be a girl mom, because I'm in the same boat, girl parent, that I don't have to keep pointing to these films and going, like, enforcing that you have to marry the main character. Like,
or if you grow a good, deep connection with someone, that doesn't always have to lead to a romantic conclusion. Mm-hmm. Like, especially, and that's the biggest thing with films. You look at all films during the 90s, and if you had two main characters of the opposite sex who had really great chemistry and they were working towards a goal, ultimately, at the end of that film, those two characters would end up falling into in love with each other, or at least find themselves arm in arm and kissing at the end of the film.
All of them. All of them.
I mean, it goes all the way up to Star Wars. Nobody thought about it.
Again, a kid movie. This is a movie for kids, young kids at that. Like, as soon as I saw the runtime of like an hour and 50 half? Or mm-hmm. something like that with credits, or I think it's even lower. You can tell this is a kid's movie because sure enough, like, you know, I look over and my kid wanted to go. She was ready to go. She's squirming around. Look, Daddy, I'm a crocodile. I'm like, okay, let's get through the movie, baby. Hey, look, did you see that? You got binoculars. You know, so like, you work with the kids, and the movie had to be short. So it was a kid's movie. Mm-hmm. I don't want my kid doesn't need to see them smooching. They don't need to fall in love. Every character was cool in their own right and had their own moment to shine. Mm-hmm. It was a good little kids movie. And then when you see the critics.
What
you expect? This isn't Scorsese.
They're over here trying to dissect it like if it's a Tarkovsky film or something. No. And they're like, oh, well, you know, the color palette at the beginning wasn't quite exactly.
It's like, bro, I literally just made Minion 6 Rise of Gru. Like,
what are you expecting?
Titanic.
Rise of Gru was a good movie, though.
So then my question to you guys is, do you guys consider this a video game adaptation, or would you say it's a film based in the universe of the video game? Like, two different things, because like, video game adaptation is more, I feel personally, I feel seems to be more in line of like maybe a certain campaign or a story thread through the game, through one of the games being interpreted into a film version, whereas
which we see in the D&D movie.
Yeah, which we see in the D&D movie, or we see things like the recent Sonic the Hedgehog movies, which is more of a build out of that character in a real world setting or in some kind of setting, creating their own storyline, like creating their own narrative, not totally like dependent on a previous campaign or a previous, you know, you think of things like the Resident Evil games, or you think of like House of 1,000 Corpses, or you think of any video game adaptation in the previous
Silent Hills,
like they're usually running through that same vein of the campaign happening in those games.
Mm.
So do you think this is more of just a game based on a movie based on the video game, or a video game adaptation?
It should fall in the camp of adaptation. Otherwise, Mario should be very aware of the Mushroom Kingdom, because he would have, like, Cranky would have come up and stolen Pauline at some point, who shows up as a mayor.
Mm. Yeah. True.
Yeah.
What do you think, Corey?
Yeah, it was original storyline. Like, yeah. I don't, to my knowledge, I've never seen Mario's family.
No. No. I like, man, that family's harsh.
I thought that was some of the best parts, though. Yeah. Really kind of brought, it really, Nintendo, I think, way back in the 80s, wasn't thinking this far ahead.
No.
It was straight up Jumpman. Hey, wasn't the guy who just jumped on a monkey? I don't know. We're going to throw him in this new thing where he's jumping on turtles. Like, yeah. It was just kind of all over the place and random, and they kind of added flashes and stories and, you know, was the Odyssey had a thing kind of similar where Bowser's whole goal is to marry Peach and is a wedding thing. So they kind of just took all this crazy stuff and said, what's a way we could break this down into an hour and a half that little kids will like it. And that maybe we could, you know, branch off into future movies
long enough for kids to sit still through the whole thing. You know,
totally.
Definitely.
What do you think, Ames?
No, I totally agree that this is more of an adaptation than it is a translation straight from cartridge to screen. And I think that's the best point about it, is because while there are critics that are like, there's no character arc, there's everything's paper, that I think that's part of the point. Little kids don't care about like a character arc. They're not going to get that.
They're not going to sit there and be like, well, you know, in the third act of this film, I really felt like the character arc fell flat. And just,
kids are crazy, too. Like, they pick up on little things you don't even realize. Yeah. And I think Mara knew that somehow Mario meant something to me because I have a Mario t-shirt, you know, and I
watch. You have that pixel art in your office?
She sees Mario. Yeah, and she wants to play with that when she goes in there. Like, she knows Mario means something to me and that I think it's cool. Mm-hmm. And you are like that kid's world. So, you know, when we went and saw the movie, I don't even know if she really liked it. You know, she might have just been saying it to make me feel better. But, you know, we had that moment. It was a good family experience. And I think a lot of gaming fathers are probably having very similar. I know I talked to Jake, who, you know, former VGB co-host. Yeah. We spent like all night just talking about the same topic of how awesome it is to share this with our kids. So that's what this was for. It's going to be a nostalgia pop. And when you think about it from top down view, Nintendo is just locking in that next generation, because when Mara turns 16, 18, 30, you know, when I pass away, that's going to be a core memory. That's something that we shared together. You know, her dad did video games, podcasting and stuff, and she is doing it too, you know? So,
yeah. And I think that's the biggest thing that Nintendo kind of gives. Mr. Miyamoto gave, and I can't pronounce the other guy's name that worked on
Reggie.
Yes. I think it is like Reggie. It's like Reggie Yokoi or something like that.
I don't know.
But they created something that was destined to be legacy. It's a legacy. Nintendo is a legacy company.
Yeah.
It is passing down from generation to generation to generation to generation. And it'll keep going as long as it's protected and valued as much as it has been. And this movie aimed to right the wrongs that the original first live action adaptation did, but it also expands on timeless values and things that we all want to instill in kids, regardless of if you're a parent or not. And I can honestly say that, like, I look forward to seeing all the kids that actually learn the Donkey Kong rap.
Yeah.
Yes. Spencer. Yes, Spencer. Or they get really angry because nobody can find Funky.
No Spencer. Kid's going to be in that camp.
I was really surprised that they gave Diddy shout outs as much as they did. He got like two solid lines in the movie, which I was stoked about. I thought that was pretty cool.
And some substantial screen time in terms of like cameos. Like, that was on him for like a good full 5 seconds.
Way more than I was expecting. I was super happy with that.
Yeah. Were there any other highlights, any other issues that you guys had before we kind of jump into our ranking for the film? Amy, since you're raising your hand awkwardly.
I'm raising my hand for the sweet release of death that is Luma
cage. I thought that one got a little too far. I wasn't into that.
It was built literally just for parents. It was like every once in a while you get the ridiculous jokes that are there for parents.
I think it was either for parents or the frustrated 13-year-old out there in the crowd.
Exactly, which I appreciated. The ones
going through hormones.
It was like the Nintendo emo version. Yeah.
Well, and that's the funny thing, that I had the 16-year-old sitting next to me for the 9 a.m. showing, and they're like,
yeah, the kids that go to Hot Topic.
Yeah, there you go.
Hot Topic is not our Hot Topic. We know that.
But exactly. The kids who went to our Hot Topic.
Went to our Hot Topic. And I think it was just a weird space. Also, it's the director's daughter that did the voice for Luma.
Nepotism.
So I was like, okay,
either that or a very clear view of whatever's happening inside that home. Someone send help.
I thought this movie wasn't woke. We got Nepo babies in here.
And I'm going to touch on one, but let other people expound. The cart selection sequence.
Oh, so cool.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to leave it. Anybody wants to pick up that ball, run.
I think the entire cart sequence to Rainbow Road and everything was like some peak cinema.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, without a doubt. You know, you had the selection kind of like how the actual game has it.
The AC/DC?
Yeah. What was that?
Thunderstruck,
yeah. That was a really great choice of song, too.
But before that, I think you were thinking of what it wasn't Take On Me. What was it?
Oh, yeah, Take On Me. When they're driving around with the monkey with a sports coat in the go-kart. And it's like, take on. And they're like literally holding on the toad as he's like trying to fly out.
I saw some people thrown aback by the fact that they used like actually efficient licensed music. But to me, it was additive. I thought it really, like, hearing the AC/DC ripping, roaring through the cart sequence was fucking, it was just badass.
It was. And the whole, the way the monkey was dressed, like, total 80s, it was like, it was just cherry on top of cherry on top of cherry. Like, it was just great. I love that whole scene. So, yeah. Spencer, was there any highlights or any issues that you had? Donkey Kong?
No, I feel like, really, I guess the only issue, and it's not really even an issue, is that the way the movie set up characters just kind of made me wish that I got more character interactions between characters that were separated for most of the movie. Mm. Like, as much as I love Bowser, it was a bit of a shame he was by himself on the piano for most of the movie. Mm. And it would have been nice to just like see him like, haha, I got you, Mario, like at some earlier point. Mm. But like, I'm fine with the movie as it is.
Mm. Or the penguins, where they were just that opening sequence and then they That's were just brilliant. Taking
Do you yield? What about you, Corey? Anything?
No. No, I think the Mario Kart sequence, the Smash sequence was also really good. I was along for the ride, man.
So that brings us now to our roundtable question, which Amy did kind of hint about it earlier.
Oh no, but I didn't plan. I'm not good at this.
So the roundtable question for today is, who would you love to see play Mario if the character gets recast in an upcoming sequel? So
okay, I already know what I want to say.
Oh, okay.
Thank God it's Spencer. There's one of us.
He goes, Jack Black. He plays both Bowser and...
That'd be interesting. But my real true answer is anybody. Like, why does it have to be a big name person? Just get someone who sounds good. Like, that was the only thing when they announced all these people. I'm like, why is it everyone is like someone big? Like, just anyone.
It's the media tour, because you see when this movie comes out, I've seen way more interviews that go viral for this movie than I've seen for just about any movie that's come out this year, at least. True. So it's the press tour. It's just the extra social media following when Jack Black gets to go work with Lyrical Lemonade to make a music video that gets a billion views on YouTube. Like, that's why you do it. If you get a bunch of no-namers, you can't get them. It's marketing.
Yeah, 100%. Like, you're getting name notoriety. You're essentially just selling off by the name.
Which is why I'm surprised Chris Pratt was their selection, because he's not like... not people aren't beating down the door to celebrate Chris Pratt these days. So, it was interesting.
Not to mention, I don't think I saw him in a lot, like a good chunk of the press junkets.
He wasn't in most of the press. He wasn't like, in almost any of them.
There was...
did you see the Jacksepticeye?
I was just going to say the Jacksepticeye junket that they did, where Keegan-Michael Key, Charlie Day, and Jack Black were all playing Mario Kart with Jacksepticeye, and there was no Chris Pratt. Mm. But I've also seen in other ones where he's not there at all either. I don't know. It's an interesting choice to go with someone like, you know, Chris Pratt, but at the same time, I would like to see more opportunities go out there for. So your choice is just anybody, essentially.
Yes.
So Not really an answer, but I hear what you're saying.
I mean, it's an answer.
It is an answer.
What about you, Amy?
So I went googling to the Italian actors that are currently here, because I was like, if we're going to go into the camp of, well, they have to be Italian, which you can fight that all day.
Joe Pesci.
Do you want to know? No. For pure, let's put ridiculous butts in the seats. Roman Reigns' dad is Italian.
What? Who the heck is his dad?
Is literally, I just Googled. And no, his mother is Italian. His father's Samoan. Sorry.
So what? You want Roman Reigns in the role?
That would be so dumb and so brilliant, but I would murder the
thing. I would rather have Paul Heyman in the role than Roman Reigns.
Paul Heyman's a dog. Exactly. That would be so cool. But I just thought, like,
your tribal chief.
My tribal chief. Oh, gosh. That was mostly for Steve's. But the other one was Michael Angarino. He's the guy in Gentleman Broncos that was the main character. He's also Will Stronghold in Sky High, if you ever saw that one.
Oh, yeah.
He's like kind of left field.
Is he actually still acting?
He's still acting. Oh, okay. And so he's kind of a bit of a, like a on the low type of actor, which there could be lots of opportunities for people to grow. But then again, also, this is a Nintendo franchise. I mean, if Mario just happens to get knocked out for the next, like, movie, we're not going to notice.
Mm. What about you, Corey?
Vince Vaughn. I think he could do it.
He could.
That would be great. I feel like that would be an interesting choice, and you would have to bring out, like, the Swingers kind of vibe of Vince Vaughn.
Yeah.
You know, to really kind of pull it off well. That's an interesting one.
What about you?
I feel like I had two choices. I either thought, okay, the most capable person who I know would bring fun and hilarity to it and still kind of hits that diverse marker would be Craig Robinson. Daryl from The Office.
Interesting.
I would like to see him actually. I mean, he could do it. It would be fun. And who's going to argue with a black man taking a diverse role?
Twitter.
Yeah, Twitter.
You know what? They can, whatever. My other option, which...
You think people were mad that it was Chris Pratt? Make Mario a black guy and see what the internet does.
Wait till he says the N-word. Then we'll see what they say.
Oh, my gosh. My
other choice, which would have been fun, and seeing as he's getting up there in years, his physical acting isn't as much as it used to be, but his vocal acting is still on par. Christopher Walken.
Like, wow. Luigi.
Exactly.
And you're 3 for 3. Somebody get the man a cookie.
Right? It would make sense to bring in somebody who's already experienced. We were talking about veteran vocal actors, and you don't get as veteran as someone like Christopher Walken. Christopher Walken is just iconic.
Dude, come on now. You're just being crazy.
Crazy.
I mean, that's even worse than me and Roman Reigns, and that was just for giggles.
Yeah. I mean, yours is just...
For giggles.
I'm literally just rethinking yours and just thinking that you said Paul Heyman. That's it.
But I like Paul Heyman. He's entertaining to me.
So let's go ahead and wrap this up as we give our ratings. Does the film pass or fail? And how many monocles out of 5 do we give it? Let's start with Spencer.
This movie definitely passes for me. Yes, it's not like, you know, a real snooty movie. It's for kids and it's fun, and like there's not really that much to complain about in this movie, so you know, sit down, just relax. It's not for you if you're not, you know, super into it. It's fine. But for me, I love this movie. I loved seeing a lot of the characters I grew up with just make big screen appearances and be way different than I remember them. It was refreshing. It was different. And it was new. So I was super happy with it. So for me, it gets 4 out of 5.
There you go. What about you, Corey?
Oh, boy. I think exactly that. Like, if I was going to rate it based off of what it was, a kid's movie, it's a perfect movie. Mm-hmm. Like, the results speak for itself. It's a masterclass in marketing. It's a masterclass in... casting, to a degree. Look at the success. You can't argue with the results. This movie's going to outgross so many block. It's
already projected to gain over $1 billion while its lifespan.
So we're getting a sequel.
Yeah,
we're getting Bill Hader's Waluigi. You know? So I'm not a film critic either. So 5 out of 5. It didn't do anything atrocious. that, you know, warranted me knocking a star down.
Yeah.
It will always hold that first movie moment with my daughter who loved it. So five out of five.
There you go. Amy.
If you were guessing, this movie passes, like, if you haven't heard us singing its praises almost this entire episode. Legacy is defined as the long-lasting impact of events or actions for another person during somebody's lifetime. And this movie is a legacy movie. There's no question about the talent, the time, and the care that has been placed into it. And it is something that I will gladly continue watching for years to come. Five out of five.
There you go. The film passes for me. It's definitely one of those movies that touches on all the nostalgic aspects of my own heart, but also I can see how much it's cultivating this new generation of nerds like us. And I say that as a term of endearment. We were nerds as kids. We were nerds as teens. We're still nerds as adults. And there was at one point in time a disconnect in terms of that within the generations. And now that we're getting more into the fray of these types of things being mainstream pop culture, mainstream media, I'm actually proud of the fact that movies like this are being made, and we can take our children, we can take our friends, we can take our family and enjoy all those nostalgic moments of memories unlocked from being a kid and recognize, hey, that's the duck from, you know, Duck Hunt, or hey, that's, you know, that's the Punch Out logo from the game Punch Out. That's, you know, what's his name? Glass Jaw Joe or whatever his name is. You know, you have all these great moments that you see throughout this movie, and you're triggered in a good way, not the woke way. You're triggered in a way that these memories are like unlocked for you, and you have that sense of like just pure joy of seeing not only you enjoy it, but other people, especially children, relish in that moment as well. So the film passes for me. In terms of Monocles, man, I have to be honest. I had a fun time with the movie, you know, in spite of whatever uproar and everything else. I think the movie pulled it off well. I feel like this movie deserves, for what it is, like Corey said, for what it is a kid's movie. And even its efforts into bringing back that nostalgia aspect to our lives. I feel like this movie deserves a 5 Monocles out of 5.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those types of movies where I can easily find myself falling back into the vein of rewatching it without even blinking an eye, without even thinking twice.
Dude, if you have kids, you're going to watch this movie 100 times. So you better, if you don't like it, you better learn to get used to it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So this movie was great. If you haven't had a chance to see it, you should definitely check it out. But for me, this movie gets a 5 out of 5. And yeah, I definitely highly recommend it, as does the rest of this cast today here at the table. But that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out over on our website at thefilmlosophers.com. There we have over allegedly 300 episodes where we have everything from action, comedy, anime, suspense, conversations about the industry. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website, thefilmlosophers.com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, whether it's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart. You can tune into your heart's desire. Find us there. Look for us at The Filmlosophers. Check us out. Subscribe. Give us a follow. Listen to our episodes. Give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
Yes, we have.
What was that question?
Somebody has to ask.
Hey, we'll talk to HR again.
No,
you can also check us out on the socials over at Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. There you can check out all of our great posts that we do, as well as all the fun stuff we do in between, including Spencer's Big Score and Amy's Jane on Scene, which can be found where again?
Hopefully, if you were listening at the beginning of the episode, it's at Jane on Scene on Instagram, because it's the only place it ever lived.
That's right. We want to thank our guest host today with us, Corey. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, this is fun.
Of course.
We had a really great time. And is there anything you want to plug really quick? No?
Nothing?
Just friendship.
There you go. Yeah. Friendship.
It's magic. Just plugging friendship.
Plugging friendship. Well, if you get a chance, this movie is still in theaters. It's definitely one of those movies you want to take your family to, take friends with you. If you know of any little ones, maybe cousins, nephews, nieces, anybody, take them to the movies. Take them to go see this one. They'll have a blast, because honestly, we had a blast and we're adults.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
But again, like I said, that wraps up another awesome episode. So, from all of us here at The Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm intern Amy.
I'm Corey.
Class dismissed.